I would very much appreciate your prayers for me over the next week. Tomorrow afternoon, I get on a plane at the Philadelphia airport and fly to Dubai. Thursday, I will spend an evening with about 100 leaders talking about the gospel in everyday life. And then Friday morning, we'll preach at the worship services there. Friday is the Sunday services in Dubai. And then a weekend conference on Friday and Saturday. United Christian Church of Dubai is a wonderful church. Some of you remember I've talked about it before. It's a church of 60 nations, and you have a chance really to preach to the world. People are there for 3 or 4 years, and they go back to nations all over the world. Last time I was there, the pastor asked if as people left, and I shook their hands, if they would tell me what nation they were from. And about 10 minutes in, I was in tears. It was just nation after nation after nation after nation. So it's a wonderful opportunity. Please be praying with us. Well, you live in a culture and are surely some way influenced by that culture that just gets greatness all wrong. You're not great because you can hit a ball that's hurled at you at 95 miles an hour. You're not great because you've had a number one hit. You're not great because you've acquired wealth and possessions. You're not great because you're in a position of power. Sorry, you're not great because you're beautiful or handsome. Things you had nothing to do with. Well, maybe if you have enough money to reform your body, as some would do. Those things just don't define greatness. And if you look at the lives of the people that we call great, you will realize quickly they're not so great after all. And so this passage is really very important for us. It's very timely for us. Because in a culture that is obsessed with celebrity, and in that way obsessed with this twisted definition of what greatness is about, we really need to understand greatness from a biblical perspective. Turn there, if you would, in your order. Oh, well, you can't do your order of worship. You actually have to turn to a Bible. Page 845 in your church Bibles. Now, let me set up where we are in Mark. This passage we're going to look at follows, first of all, the amazing glory of the Transfiguration, where Christ's humanity is peeled back and his divinity is revealed and his place in the plan of redemption. That is followed by the debacle of the disciples being asked to deliver a little boy from the evil that he was under control of. And the disciples prayerlessly attempted to do that, and it was just a mess. And Christ delivers the boy, and then he tells the disciples the reason they had no power is because they tried to do this thing in their own power. Now remember, I've said this to you, that Jesus had chosen these men not just to be witnesses to the work of the kingdom, but to be tools, participants, instruments of the work of that kingdom. And so these disciples were in his 24/7 school of discipleship. And his goal was not just that they would be informed so they would have a proper theology of the incarnation, but his goal was that they would be transformed, that by means of the person and work of the Messiah that they were following, that their hearts would become hearts of faith, and that they would live in a radically different way. That was Christ's goal. So after the debacle of their inability to deliver this little boy, Christ wants to get the disciples apart again and to teach them. And so he's, as you will look there in verse 30, he's sort of sneaking through Galilee. He's gained a lot of notoriety whenever it would be known that he was someplace. Immediately a crowd would gather of the broken of humanity and beseech him for healing. And Jesus wants to focus on his preparation of and transformation of these ones who he's chosen to represent him. Verse 31 gives us the epicenter of his teaching. For he was teaching his disciples, saying, "The Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill him, and when he is killed, after 3 days he will rise." Jesus again wants the disciples to understand the epicenter of his reason for coming. His reason for coming was not just to be a great miracle worker and relieve suffering of the fall. His purpose was not just to be a great teacher and unfold the truths of the kingdom. The epicenter of his mission was the cross and the tomb. You could argue that a great title for this little section of teaching could be, "This is how bad sin is, and this is how great grace is." Sin is just this horrific, that it leaves every human being broken, unable to live the way they were meant to live. But even more importantly, it leaves every human being guilty before God. We have to believe, we have to preach, God's anger is real and justified. Because in some way, all of us are rebels against his authority, rebels against his law, rebels against his glory. His anger is real. And without the righteousness of his anger, there would be no need for the cross. And all of us have been affected by sin. It is the ultimate human disease. And all of us are without ability to deliver ourselves. Here's why. Sin is not just a matter of your behavior. If it was a matter of behavior, perhaps you could step out of that behavior and learn to behave more appropriately. No, sin is a matter of the heart. It's a matter of the nature. It's in every fiber of your thoughts and desires and motivations. And you cannot defeat sin because you are unable to escape you. And so because this holy God is also a God of glorious grace, he made a way in the coming of his Son, not to compromise his righteousness, but to provide justification and forgiveness and the imputation of righteousness and deliverance and new life. Jesus had to come. He had to live that perfect life. He had to be the sacrificial lamb. He had to conquer death by the empty tomb. There was no other way. And so God controlled the march of history so at a certain point his Son would come. You could argue that the cross and the empty tomb defines who you are and defines who God is. You are guilty and unable. God is holy and graciously willing. There's hope. And you see, it's very important for you to realize the problem with the disciples was not just that they didn't understand Christ's mission. It's very clear that they were still confused about the mission of Christ. That confusion is a deeper confusion. They didn't know who they were. They didn't know the gravity of their own need. They didn't know their powerlessness to defeat sin, or they wouldn't have tried in the previous vignette to try to defeat it on their own. And there is in all of us a tendency to minimize the gravity of our condition. We're good at explaining away our sin. We say it's a busy day, or we say we weren't feeling well, or We say, look who I'm living near, or look at the pressure of the situation. All of those things minimize sin. And when you minimize sin, then you minimize the grace of the cross of the Lord Jesus Christ. You only esteem the cross, you only celebrate the cross when you are ready to admit how desperate your state is. Disciples didn't know who they were. And they have an interesting response to this moment of teaching. Look what it says in 32, but they did not understand the saying and were afraid to ask him. The gospel is bad news before it becomes good news, because it forces you to face the reality of sin in order to understand the glory of grace. These men didn't want to think about the reality that Christ was marching toward his death. When Christ says that he's going to be delivered into the hands of men, he's not saying somehow at that moment life will be out of his control. Remember, Jesus said, no one takes my life from me. I lay it down of my own accord. He's announcing what is the plan of God. And for these men, it was unthinkable that this one that they had given their lives to follow would die. And even more unthinkable was this inconceivable thing of the resurrection. And they just didn't want to think about it. They were afraid to ask more, and so they didn't. Now, immediately after this discussion, Christ leads his disciples to Capernaum. And on the way, he observes that they're in quite an aggressive discussion, an argument. It is a bit of a shocking argument. Well, it's not a bit of. It's a real shocking argument. And when Jesus asked the disciples, because he's observed as they're walking, that they're arguing what they were arguing about, they don't want to tell him. Well, he knew. They were arguing on the heels of what he's just talked about who was the greatest. Now, I want to put this in context for you. This is the second time in Mark where Jesus has directly predicted with some detail his coming death. The last time Jesus talked about the death that he was marching toward, that was his purpose for coming, follow me, his discussion was followed immediately by him calling the disciples to also take up a cross and to deny themselves and to follow him. That discussion was, not only do I carry a cross, but if you want to follow me, you must carry a cross. You must die to your centrality in your universe. You must die to the glory of you. You must die.